Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. I want to thank the 85,000 downloads of our recent commentaries. Yesterday alone, in just about an hour or so, 20,000 downloads. Please go to yesterday's show on our archives and download the article. Go to GaryNall.com. The article is there. Share it with everyone you can. I'll be doing more articles. In fact, I'll write one tonight for our next program dealing with the human condition and why we need to work together. We need conciliation, cooperation. We need to join forces, not to allow ourselves to become victims of identity politics and the woke culture, the cancel culture, the divisive culture. You'll know them by their names, because when I look at what I hear in the mainstream media, including all the corporate media and much of the alternative media, unfortunately, I hear words that involve deceit, mendacity, betrayal, treachery, dishonesty, fraud, falsehood, duplicity, cunning, insincerity, dupery, trumpery, fraudulence, perfidy, unfaithfulness. When I listen to politicians on either side of the spectrum, I hear words that lead to crime, nepotism, cronyism, shadiness, exploitation, malfeasance, profiteering, fraudulency, and graft. So isn't it time to begin to select the topics ourselves and we take power back so we can engage in the words of truth, truthfulness, integrity, sincerity, genuineness, authenticity, veracity, factualism, realism, rectitude, legitimacy, certainty, and principle. That is where we're headed. That is what we will do on this program. Today, for example, Dr. Merrill Nass, NASS, just yesterday listened to the FDA's recent meeting on the Vaccines and Related Biological Advisory Committee. They told us the government's handling of stopping the pandemic only could be done by vaccination. They lied. As a result, she is here to tell us about their lies. We will show those lies, and we'll show you the corruption, we'll show you the malfeasance, we'll show you everything that is wrong with our entire medical industrial complex and our media complex, our surveillance complex, because they're all working together. She will be that voice today. I'll give you the latest on health and nutrition, all good, especially when we talk about how to extend our lives and reverse disease. But then today, as I promised, I will take you on that new journey. As bad as COVID has been, and it has been really bad for so many people on this planet, unnecessary detention, unnecessary masks, unnecessary distancing, unnecessary vaccines, unnecessary drugs, and yet the drugs that could have made a difference were excluded, attacked. Why? Well, because they're ready for what is waiting to happen now. It's being prepared. They're not secret about it any longer. It's in the open. That's how much confidence they have in our complicity. I believe they are wrong. So you will hear today discussions you have not heard ever before. We will take you on a journey, beginning with China. And China's promoting what will be the World Economic Forum's first point, a credit system. The world will follow China on this. And for the first half of it, it seems reasonable to the average person. Why not have everything so easy? No down payments, no ownership, no necessity of doing anything except keep your credit score high. But it's in the last minute and a half that the real truth is told of how we're going to have a two-tiered system, those who comply and get good credits and those who don't and will be punished and excluded from everything. This is not something that is a dystopian nightmare. This is happening right as we speak. This begins the fourth industrial revolution, and it will dwarf in pain and suffering, control and censorship, anything that we've experienced up to this point through COVID. That's why I said that in the middle of COVID, the worst was yet to come. The worst is beginning, but we're going to expose it. And then you take an intellect, a very astute intellect, who believes in evolution, but now evolution and the survival of the species, which was a very narrowly framed discussion. It left out completely the power of faith, the power of energy, the power of that which is not seen or measurable in life, the vital life forces. It denies all that. And it says, as you will see, to a packed house, and this is the economic forms group, that we intend to have humans, based upon their credit score and their deserving, become a part of a unique society, the transhumans. It is happening as we speak, not the future. It is happening now. You have a window to see this by hearing one of its leading architects. We'll also take today an opportunity to continue our discussion of the deeper meaning of life, how to change your attitude, to change your life. So you see, we're going to be swimming in some deep water today. I welcome all of you to join in. We can all benefit improving ourselves by changing our perception of the world we live in, and therefore change the capacity for our reality to be harmonizing with the low end of the primal reptilian brain of those in power. We begin on a lighter note with our health. From Texas Women's University, an article presented in Nutrition Online, most Americans are not getting enough fiber in their diet. Just 7% of adults meet fiber recommendations, raising risk of chronic disease. Now, remember, it was 2 years ago when the latest official statistics showed that only 7% of Americans were eating a healthy diet and gaining a sense of balance in their life to prevent disease by exercising, doing stress management, making healthy choices, taking the right supplements. Well, 7% is not a little amount. It's about 25 million more or less people. And in the United States alone, that's a lot of people. But it also means 93% of the people are doing a lot that works against them. So when only 5% of men and 9% of women are getting the recommended daily amounts of dietary fiber, according to this latest study, that means you're not getting all the nutrients that would be in a high-fiber diet. Hence, what you're getting are low-fiber foods. There's your French fries. That's your pizza crust. That's your bagels and bread and pastas. And that's all your sugary desserts. And that gives you heart disease and diabetes, obesity, and depression. Quote, these findings should remind people to choose fiber-rich foods like whole grains, fruits, and vegetables to reduce their risk of heart disease, so said Dr. Mikritanis, the professor at Texas Women's University, the lead author. Quote, based upon our findings, fewer than 1 in 10 adults meet the daily requirements for fiber intake. For those with diabetes, it's especially important to eat enough fiber since they're at greater risk for heart disease. This gives me an example. In fact, I'm going to ask Jesse to find this tape, please, and post it on GaryNall.com and PRN.fm. There's a man named Fred Fisher. He has passed, but he lived a really long life compared to what he would have lived. He would have died in his early 50s when he gave me the desperate call one day and said that he listened to the show, but he didn't follow my advice, but now he has no choice. He's 727 pounds. His cholesterol, his triglycerides, his blood sugar, his blood pressure were off the charts. I'd never heard of a person having those high in numbers, which means you're going to die. His doctor told him he would die if he didn't have the surgery, but if he did have the surgery, there's a high chance he would die because of his weight and age and condition. So he didn't know what to do. That's when he called, and I said, yes, I'll help him. I brought him down to where I live, and we began this process. Mind you, it's not easy for someone who's carrying 727 pounds to do anything. Just standing and walking 5 feet can cause exhaustion. But a year later, and then a year and a half later, he had lost over 500 pounds. And a lot of the weight he had on was just folds of skin that he was going to have surgically removed. His blood pressure normal, cholesterol normal, arthritis gone, depression gone, heart disease gone, congestive heart failure gone, high blood pressure gone. Everything that was wrong was gone. He came on a PBS presentation I did. In fact, he held his belt up, and I'm 6'2", and it was taller than me. And now you look at him. He would sit on his stoop in Brooklyn and talk with passersby and neighborhood people who knew him, and he would encourage all of them. I can only imagine how many thousands of people he encouraged to make healthier choices. We filmed him. It's a short film. Watch it so you can see the consequences of eating a low-fiber diet versus eating a high-fiber diet, loving yourself enough to invest in yourself with positive attitude versus being in contempt to yourself or loathing yourself to where you don't care what you do. In fact, you actually go out of your way to drink or smoke or take drugs that can harm you. So we have to live by example, and Fred Fischer was an outstanding example. From the University of Munich, which is in Germany, this was presented at the World Congress of Pediatric Gastroenterology and Nutrition. Fish oil consumed during pregnancy by mothers associated with better problem solving and concentration in their children. You want a kid that's going to grow up better, healthier, and better able to handle life? Take fish oil, the omega-3 fatty acids. Also take folic acid, and that can make a difference. This was a multi-center group that did this, so very good to know that a single nutrient, omega, can help the developing fetus. University College London, as well as Children's Memorial Health Institute in Poland, vegan diets in children may bring heart benefits. That's important. Make sure your child's getting adequate protein from plant-based foods. I always suggest for children to give them one scoop of a protein powder. It can be made from hemp or split pea, brown rice. There's a lot of different sources you can use, flaxseed. In addition to nuts and seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, they all work. They're all good sources. Your beans and legumes are particularly rich in protein, plus supplement with B12 each day. This was a peer-reviewed study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So what you have to do is just use the principles of what your body needs and supply it. And that can make for a very healthy vegan child. Berberine, B-E-R-B-E-R-I-N-E. A friend of mine, I gave him a protocol for osteoporosis. He has several protocols. This guy has got a lot of problems. Shouldn't, he's smart enough, but then again, possibly because he thinks he's too smart and always the smartest guy in the room, he makes some foolish mistakes. Well, you want something that really tops the list on osteoporosis prevention? Berberine for bone regeneration. There's a good study you can look up from Weifang Medical University on this. And that's just the latest. The results has a long history where berberine has been used by various people throughout the Middle East and the Far East to help with bones. Sugar overload, that's most people, is a recipe for long-term problems. Queensland University of Technology in Australia published in Frontiers Neuroscience, children who consume too much sugar could be at greater risk of becoming obese, hyperactive, and cognitively impaired as adults. That's the study. It isn't even talk about how it can suppress your immune system, make you more susceptible to all forms of autoimmune conditions. So get off the sugar. And there are a lot of other things you can do that are natural, that are still sweet. And finally, from Shahid Sodoi, University of Medical Sciences, published in the International Journal of Vitamin Nutrition Research, coenzyme Q10, associated with a lower pro-inflammatory factors in randomized trials, meaning if you want to turn off inflammation in your body, especially your heart, in your arteries, coenzyme Q10 is just the thing. Oh, and by the way, please don't take these high fructose corn drinks, which are almost all the sodas you drink. University of California shows that fructose causes genetic changes in the brain that increase the risk of disease. Yeah, it's no secret that sugary drinks, sweets, and other processed foods contain high fructose corn syrup. All of it is detrimental to your health. And the pervasiveness of high fructose corn syrup in the American diet is even blamed on diabetes. So let's get rid of that. We don't need it. Use stevia. There are other sources. That's the latest on Health and Healing. We're 16 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to show you what is being done right now. And this is a part of the Great Reset. This is a part of the Fourth Industrial Revolution, one and the same. And this is what Wolfgang Schaeff and others intend for the whole world to start using as a model. This is about being a good citizen and getting credit for it. Sounds great. It isn't. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. By the way, you can watch this, and I hope you do, by going first to prn.fm, but then scroll down to where it says show notes. That's where all of our videos are shown in real time. Show notes, okay? This is the credit score problem that we're all going to face.
Beijing is getting warm. I'm going to take a trip around the city, and most importantly, I want to show you something that you can only do it in China. Usually, if you rent something, you pay deposit. But in China, you have another option, just like this bike. This bike is not mine. I rent it, and I pay 1 yuan per hour. But when I took it away, I didn't pay any deposit. Why is it? The Chinese government officially announced the plan to build up a nationally coordinated social credit system in 2014. In 2015, Alibaba subsidiary Ant Financial launched Sesame Credit, a private credit system. All your shopping habits, your bank statement, and if you pay your bill on time will affect your Sesame Credit. For example, my Sesame Credit is 745. That's why I can rent the bike without deposit. Bikes are cheap, but what about a car? See? There is a sharing car. Generally, as far as I know, a deposit money for a sharing car is around 1,000 yuan. If you look at my bag, I can't afford a car, definitely. I can have 5 handbags like this with 1,000 yuan. Let's see what I can do with this sharing car. Yes, it says 700 Sesame credit works. I can go with this car without leaving deposit. Otherwise, I should pay 700 yuan. I think the credit system actually helps me to get access to more social services. For those who are like me, we don't own houses, cars, or credit cards. This kind of information are not available for us to measure our financial situation. So thanks to the credit system, it offers an alternative means for us. Last August, I got my driving license. So it has been even less than half a year I've been driving. Thanks to the sharing car, I practice a lot. The good thing is, I haven't had any accident till now. It's Saturday, we are heading to a supermarket. 大哥, 你挡住我的右后视镜了。 Let's go to the market. And you can also use Sesame Credit in many other occasions. Without limit deposit, you can also borrow portable phone chargers, toys, umbrellas, clothes, watches, and phones. Also, your Sesame Credit report is accepted as a part of your financial statement when you are applying for a traveling visa in certain countries. During your trip, you can even book an B&B hostel without paying deposit as long as your Sesame Credit is over 550. So apart from private actors such as and financial sesame credit I mentioned before, the government is also building up a nationally coordinated system. Here I am at the Credit Reference Center of the People's Bank of China. So here I will print out my personal credit report. So this is it. This is a self-help machine. Every citizen in China, as long as you have your personal ID card with you, you can print out your personal credit report. It's coming up. There it is. So the report has two pages, and there we are. This is my personal credit report. It's my first time to see it. I really need someone to explain every details for me.
这不是信用信用概要吗？这是您的基本信息。对，这是信用信息。对，相关的信息呢？这个即使报到争议系统呢，也是这个商业行取得授权进行报送的，或者依据政策共享制争议系统的，所有的信息都是这个公开的，或者是依据相关政策展示的。Trustworthy
people should be given enough rewards, but for those who break trust, should also pay for it. It brings me to another part of the government social credit system. Here I am at the Supreme People's Court in Beijing. Till February 2019, over 30 million people are named in a list of dishonest persons subject to enforcement by this court. They cannot go traveling by planes. They cannot go traveling by high-speed trains. They cannot go to luxury restaurants, and they can't get a golf courses. They are unable to get an insurance, and they can't even rent a house. If trust is broken in one place, restrictions are imposed everywhere. Actually, personal scoring system has been present in the West for decades. For example, eBay...
Okay, you heard the ending of that, right? That if 30 million people in China in one court were found not to be trustworthy, now, that didn't mean that they broke a law. It meant that they simply were not being compliant to what the Communist Party wanted of them, expected of them. In fact, it's at this level. If someone jaywalks, everyone in that entire area and everywhere they go that day, everyone's phone will ring, and that person jaywalking and being shamed is shown. If you don't pay a bill, you can then lose your credits, in which case you heard you can't fly, you can't travel, you can't go to a market, you can't go to a restaurant, you can't go to a movie theater, you can't go to a venue, you can't get on a train, a plane, a bus. In effect, they are locking you out of the system. That is what it means to be a good citizen. How do you think that's going to go down? But that's a part of the great global reset, being the good citizen. Oh, and by the way, for all those people who believed if you got the vaccine, you'd be protected. Just today it was revealed that a celebrity millennial cruise passengers tested positive for COVID on a fully vaccinated ship. Well, well, about that. But it gets worse. This is also the case. The CDC holds an emergency meeting after hundreds suffer heart inflammatory conditions following COVID vaccines. Okay. So now there's all these heart conditions, especially in younger people who didn't have them before. And this is just the beginning. Something for us to think about. Now we're going to go to a very profoundly concerning discussion. I believe in open debate, open lectures, but I would have loved it if one of us who believe that we are more than biological agents to be manipulated and our data stored and controlled were in this discussion. But we weren't. Here's an individual, highly respected from Israel, who is with a large group of people in an auditorium talking about transhumanism, what is being planned now. And by the way, Klaus Schwab said that this will be happening within the next 5 to 10 years. It'll go faster because they've been working on it for some time. Here's what he has to say. This is what's really important today that you listen to and then tie this into how you can control population. because you'll have two distinct groups within the society that we're now facing. You'll have those that have all the power. You see it now. And in the media, in government, in social platforms, it's all one. Therefore, whatever they say becomes the rule that we all must abide by. In Canada, they now have, the College of Physicians and Surgeons Canada has deemed that you can lose your license if you say anything that challenges the official COVID narrative. And yet the COVID narrative is inaccurate, should be challenged. Science allows for challenge. Science is based upon challenge. When science becomes orthodox, it no longer becomes science. So now you have those who are willing to seek the truth and be banned, shunned, jailed for it, or you become a citizen who's not a scientist, not a journalist, not an activist, but everything must be done exactly as you're told because you're nothing more than a data mining resource. And if you disobey on any level, then you will be the secondary citizen. You'll be the serf. And everyone else will bear the fruits of that digitalized society, the transhuman society, which is not in the future. It is absolutely positively right now as I'm speaking. Let's go to the tape.
And can I have a bit more light on the audience so I can see the faces and not just speak to a darkness? Thank you. So I want to talk to you today about the future of our species and really the future of life. We are probably one of the last generations of Homo sapiens. Within a century or two, Earth will be dominated by entities that are more different from us than we are different from Neanderthals or from chimpanzees. Because in the coming generations, we will learn how to engineer bodies and brains and minds. These will be the main products of the economy, of the 21st century economy. Not textiles and vehicles and weapons, but bodies and brains and minds. Now, how exactly will the future masters of the planet look like? This will be decided by the people who own the data. Those who control the data control the future, not just of humanity, but the future of life itself. Because today, data is the most important asset in the world. In ancient times, land was the most important asset. And if too much land became concentrated in too few hands, humanity split into aristocrats and commoners. Then in the modern age, in the last two centuries, machinery replaced land as the most important asset. And if too many of the machines became concentrated in too few hands, humanity split into classes, into capitalists and proletariats. Now data is replacing machinery as the most important asset. And if too much of the data becomes concentrated in too few hands, humanity will split not into classes. It will split into species, into different species. Now, why is data so important? It's important because we've reached the point when we can hack not just computers, we can hack human beings and other organisms. There is a lot of talk these days about hacking computers and email accounts and bank accounts and mobile phones, but actually we are gaining the ability to hack human beings. Now, what do you need in order to hack a human being? You need two things. You need a lot of computing power, and you need a lot of data, especially biometric data. Not data about what I buy or where I go, but data about what is happening inside my body and inside my brain. Until today, nobody had the necessary computing power and the necessary data to hack humanity. Even if the Soviet KGB of the Spanish Inquisition followed you around everywhere, 24 hours a day, watching everything you do, listening to everything you say. Still, they didn't have the computing power and the biological knowledge necessary to make sense of what was happening inside your body and brain and to understand how you feel and what you think and what you want. But this is now changing because of two simultaneous revolutions. On the one hand, advances in computer science, and especially the rise of machine learning and AI, are giving us the necessary computing power. And at the same time, advances in biology, and especially in brain science, are giving us the necessary understanding, biological understanding. You can really summarize 150 years of biological research since Charles Darwin in three words. Organisms are algorithms. This is the big insight of the modern life sciences, that organisms, whether viruses or bananas or humans, they are really just biochemical algorithms. And we are learning how to decipher these algorithms. Now, when the two revolutions merge, when the infotech revolution merges with the biotech revolution, what you get is the ability to hack human beings. And maybe the most important invention for the merger of infotech and biotech is the biometric sensor that translates biochemical processes in the body and the brain into electronic signals that a computer can store and analyze. And once you have enough such biometric information and enough computing power, you can create algorithms that know me better than I know myself. And humans really don't know themselves very well. This is why algorithms have a real chance of getting to know ourselves better. We don't really know ourselves. To give an example, when I was 21, I finally realized that I was gay after living for several years in denial. And this is not exceptional. A lot of gay men live in denial for many years. They don't know something very important about themselves. Now imagine the situation in 10 or 20 years when an algorithm can tell any teenager exactly where he or she is on the gay-straight spectrum and even how malleable this position is. The algorithm tracks your eye movements, your blood pressure, your brain activity, and tells you who you are. Now, maybe you personally wouldn't like to make use of such an algorithm. But maybe you find yourself in some boring birthday party of somebody from your class at school, and one of your friends has this wonderful idea that I've just heard about this cool new algorithm that tells you your sexual orientation, and wouldn't it be a lot of fun if everybody just takes turns testing themselves on this algorithm as everybody else is watching and commenting? What would you do? Would you just walk away? And even if you walk away, and even if you keep hiding from your classmates or from yourself, you will not be able to hide from Amazon and Alibaba and the secret police. As you surf the internet, as you watch videos or check your social feed, the algorithms will be monitoring your eye movements, your blood pressure, your brain activity, and they will know. They could tell Coca-Cola that if you want to sell this person some fuzzy, sugary drink, don't use the advertisement with the shirtless girl. Use the advertisement with the shirtless guy. You wouldn't even know that this was happening, but they will know, and this information will be worth billions. Once we have algorithms that can understand me better than I understand myself, they could predict my desires, manipulate my emotions, and even take decisions on my behalf. And if we are not careful, the outcome might be the rise of digital dictatorships. In the 20th century, democracy generally outperformed dictatorship because democracy was better at processing data and making decisions. We are used to thinking about democracy and dictatorship in ethical or political terms. But actually, these are two different methods to process information. Democracy processes information in a distributed way. It distributes the information and the power to make decisions between many institutions and individuals. Dictatorship, on the other hand, concentrates all the information and power in one place. Now, given the technological conditions of the 20th century, distributed data processing worked better than centralized data processing, which is one of the main reasons why democracy outperformed dictatorship and why, for example, the US economy outperformed the Soviet economy. But this is true only under the unique technological conditions of the 20th century. In the 21st century, new technological revolutions, especially AI and machine learning, might swing the pendulum in the opposite direction. They might make centralized data processing far more efficient than distributed data processing. And if democracy cannot adapt to these new conditions, then humans will come to live under the rule of digital dictatorships. And already at present, we are seeing the formation of more and more sophisticated surveillance regimes throughout the world, not just by authoritarian regimes, but also by democratic governments. The US, for example, is building a global surveillance system, while my home country of Israel is trying to build a total surveillance regime in the West Bank. But control of data might enable human elites to do something even more radical than just build digital dictatorships. By hacking organisms, elites may gain the power to re-engineer the future of life itself. Because once you can hack something, you can usually also engineer it. And if indeed we succeed in hacking and engineering life, this will be not just the greatest revolution in the history of humanity. This will be the greatest revolution in biology since the very beginning of life 4 billion years ago. For 4 billion years, nothing fundamental changed in the basic rules of the game of life. All of life for 4 billion years, dinosaurs, amoebas, tomatoes, humans, all of life was subject to the laws of natural selection and to the laws of organic biochemistry. But this is now about to change. Science is replacing evolution by natural selection with evolution by intelligent design. Not the intelligent design of some god above the clouds, but our intelligent design and the intelligent design of our clouds, the IBM cloud, the Microsoft cloud, these are the new driving forces of evolution. And at the same time, science may enable life, after being confined for 4 billion years to the limited realm of organic compounds, science may enable life to break out into the inorganic realm. So after 4 billion years of organic life shaped by natural selection, we are entering the era of inorganic life shaped by intelligent design. This is why the ownership of data is so important. If we don't regulate it, a tiny elite may come to control not just the future of human societies, but the shape of life forms in the future. So how to regulate the data, the ownership of data. We have had 10,000 years of experience regulating the ownership of land. We have had a few centuries of experience regulating the ownership of industrial machinery. But we don't have much experience.
Okay, that was Professor N. Israel Harari. And there's more. You can go to prn.fm and download the entire lecture. But remember what he was saying, and he was unequivocal about it, that transhumanism is here now. It's being promoted as part of the great economic reset. They want to have all control over every aspect of your life. And unfortunately, there are segments of our society that believe that they should trust their control over our lives. I do not subscribe to that. I believe that the uniqueness of the individual and that all life is spiritual completely contradicts their argument that everything is based upon the survival of the strongest and Darwinian philosophy. But that's where they're going, and they have major groups on their side, Council on Foreign Relations, all the major politicians, corporations, they're all on board. So just remember now, tie that in with the Chinese credit score. Be a good citizen. Do what you're told. Don't do anything that embarrasses corporations or the government, and you'll be rewarded. We'll allow you certain privileges. In the United States right now, we're already seeing fascism. The true seekers, those who I mentioned at the beginning of the program, who have a different dialogue, a different dynamic understanding of the language of truth, they're all being canceled, dismissed, shunned, and attacked. Tens of thousands of scientists, physicians, all orthodox, are now being attacked. But thank goodness they exist, because they are the front line in this movement. We will have more on that on our next program. I'll take you in a different direction each day to show you what's happening and why we should all be concerned about it. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by Dr. Merrill Nass, who I told you at the beginning of the program will be talking about this CDC, the FDA, and why you should question anything they say. Very important. Please stay with us. Nice to have you all with us today. I'm Gary Nall. Just one quick program announcement. This Sunday at noon, for a small group of individuals who are interested in getting off the grid and learning homesteading and being a part of a homesteading project, we have one up and running. And I'm filming it so that it can be a model to share all over the world of how you can get off the grid, support yourself, grow things, make things organically. And there'll be a call to discuss all this. Write down the number 712-451-0200. 712-451-0200. PIN number 444-555. That's 444-555. And I'm posting this on GaryNall.com and PRN.FM. Now over to, and by the way, someone just called and says, how do you spell this gentleman's name? Noah, N-O-A-H, Harari, H-A-R-A-R-I, was the professor talking about this whole subject. Merrill Nass, I gave her bio a little earlier. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, good to talk to you again.
Would you tell us what happened in this discussion and why the truth of it was that none of the people's conflicts of interest and their out-and-out deceptive statements were talked about by anyone or challenged by the mainstream media. So whatever they said becomes the so-called truth in science reporting, when it was nothing more than obfuscation of the truth and lies. The forum is yours.
Okay. So the FDA and the CDC and other federal agencies have advisory committees, and this is by law. So I believe they have to have advisory committees. And FDA has a number of them to advise on the licensing of different kinds of drugs or vaccines. In fact, this week, after FDA licensed a drug for Alzheimer's that costs more than $1,000 a week and apparently doesn't work, three different members of the advisory committee who looked into that drug quit and said, this whole process is a sham. So that happened. The second one quit the day before the meeting, and the third one quit yesterday during the meeting. It was an all-day meeting. So I'm sure the FDA was a little nervous about that because they were written up in the Washington Post and got a lot of press. So the FDA has a mission, of course, to protect us by examining the drugs, the vaccines, the food, the cosmetics that we use and consume. But since the early 1990s, the federal government, our legislature, the Congress, saw fit to change the law so that FDA could be paid by manufacturers of products to evaluate those products. And I guess in a way that made sense, because if one manufacturer has 1,000 products they want reviewed, you know, they should probably pay more. You know, there should be some way that they have to chip in compared to somebody who has one product. But in any event, this then started adding up to almost half the FDA's budget. The FDA has a big budget. The federal taxpayer pays $3.2 billion a year to the FDA. So when that began happening, FDA seemed to lean over and start paying a lot more attention to the needs of the manufacturers who it calls its clients, rather than the citizens who are supposed to be the real clients of the FDA. And so right now there's no FDA commissioner. There is a physician, Janet Woodcock, who has been twice head of the Center for Drugs, which is the most powerful center at FDA. And she is currently the acting commissioner. Now, she was found to have cheated, basically. And it was written up by the editor of The Lancet exactly 20 years ago. There was a drug that turned out to be dangerous. It was taken off the market. And then she worked with the manufacturer to bring it back onto the market, even though it had killed people, by changing the label and changing the name. And so there was a whistleblower, and it was documented that she had a secret process working with the manufacturer while she had this other process with her advisory committee and the doctors who generally review drugs. And so she sneakily got it through. Instead of being fired, she continued to work there. And as I said, she is now the acting commissioner of the CDC. So she is in charge of behind the scenes for everything important that goes on there. And we know that she is a dirty worker. I mean, this was documented in The Lancet. We know that she rules that place with an iron hand, and we don't know who pays her, who makes the decisions, who she takes her orders from. So anyway, in that context, we have COVID vaccines. None of them have been studied very much. They probably have not followed the law in terms of how they were supposed to have been studied. My reading of the statutes on this says that you have to do animal experiments before you can approve the drug for use in humans and test it in humans. To my understanding, that was not properly done. The FDA allowed human tests to begin when only the most minimal animal tests had been done. And in the documents that have been submitted to FDA they are authorized, they are not approved, not licensed. They are considered, according to law, experimental investigational products. And you are supposed to provide informed consent, and you are supposed to be informed about the risks and benefits and the alternatives whenever you take an investigational product. That is not happening. As you know, people are being forced to take this under threat of losing their jobs or not being able to attend college or other schools. Well, right now, the Pfizer vaccine has been authorized for ages 12 and up, and the other two vaccines that are authorized in the U.S. are only for ages 18 and up, and that's because of the clinical trials that they've done and the FDA has okayed. What FDA would like to happen, probably, is to license all these drugs. I mean, the goal is to get everything licensed, fully studied, you know, finish the trials, and then consider also whether it should be, whether these vaccines should be used in children. Children are a very sticky part of the equation because almost none of them die from COVID. They don't get very sick. They apparently don't spread it very much. There are studies in schools which show that teachers who taught in school versus teachers who taught, you know, on Zoom had the same rates of COVID. There are a number of studies that indicate that children are not big spreaders of this condition for whatever reason. And so if they don't get sick and they don't spread it much, and for those reasons, there was an op-ed in the Washington Post by physicians that said they don't actually contribute to herd immunity. So if we don't have to fear getting it from children, right, that we don't need them to be vaccinated to protect the elderly or everybody else. So then the question becomes, what is the risk versus the benefit for the children alone, not for society, you know, for the children? And it turned out over the last few weeks that these vaccines cause myocarditis in teenagers. Myocarditis is inflammation of the heart. It can be the lining outside of the heart, which is pericarditis, or the heart muscle, different parts. And you can have a variety of complications that include heart failure, arrhythmias, and even a blockage of a coronary artery, which would result in a heart attack. Or you can heal from this condition with no sequelae, no complications. But you never know when you get it whether you're going to heal properly. And if you do get it, you should not play heavy sports. You should not overexert yourself. And of course, people have not been getting warned about this complication. So teenagers and young men who are getting this condition after their vaccinations, their messenger RNA vaccinations, may not be taking proper care and may, in fact, be exercising.
Meryl, just hold your thoughts for one moment. I just want to say that we're going to be signing off here for our WBA audience because they go to the news top of the hour, but everyone else can continue listening. We're going clear to the top of the hour with Dr. Meryl Nass, a board-certified physician and researcher at prn.fm. Please continue.
Okay, so under this situation where it's not at all clear that the benefits for children are greater than the risk, it's probably the opposite, and we don't know anything about long-term side effects because the child trials have only been going on for a very few months, and the trial for the 12 to 16-year-old age group only enrolled 1,005 children who got vaccinated, and then there were about 1,000 who didn't get vaccinated. So it's a small trial. It only lasted a median of 2 months. It looks like the vaccine works. It may actually impair your immune system for a couple of weeks after you're vaccinated, and then you'll go back to normal. And I say that because there's been a lot of shingles infections shortly after the vaccine, and there have been increased COVID infections in some places after the vaccine. But then after the first few weeks, it seems to work reasonably well. The question is really safety. FDA and the federal government want children to take this in school. They want everybody in the country to get this vaccine, and so they've thrown up many roadblocks in front of our normal lives to induce us to be vaccinated. For example, you know, getting on an airplane, going to an event. In some states, you can't go without being vaccinated. Can't get on a plane in some places. And in the fall, you may not be able to send your child to school. They're saying that many, many colleges, over 100, have said they're not going to allow college students to attend unless they're vaccinated, and which is ridiculous because college students have almost no deaths, almost no hospitalizations, very, very little serious illness from this. So, and the even more outrageous thing is that a third of the United States has already been infected. You know, they already have immunity. And so vaccinating those who already are immune increases the side effects. So they have 2 to 3 times the risk of side effects, and they get no benefit. They probably have probably lifelong immunity anyway, or very long standing. Certainly after SARS-1, we know that people have had 17 years worth of immunity. And currently people have T cells that and cells in the bone marrow that are long lasting, that should provide long lasting immunity. So having said all, the FDA needs to cover its butt and come up with a plan that it can say its experts go along with. This is not just our idea. We convened a group of experts and they liked it. You know, they thought we should do the same thing, basically. So that's, I think, what the meeting yesterday was about. And it was of interest to me that they didn't have that many of the regular people on that committee. There were only 10 out of about 16 people who are normally on that committee who appeared, but there were 12 temporary members. And FDA has had a lot of temporary members. This is the fourth COVID vaccine meeting they've convened since last December. So in each one, they've had about a dozen temporary members. Well, the members of this committee seem to have been handpicked to give the FDA cover. There are people, almost everybody on the committee, whether temporary or permanent, you know, makes their money from doing vaccine trials or vaccine research of some kind. Paul Offit, who is again on the committee, is a famed vaccine booster. He's written about 10 books on vaccines. You can hardly find anyone who likes vaccines more than Paul. Melinda Wharton was on the committee as a temp member yesterday. She has, you know, spent over 20 years saying that vaccines don't cause side effects, vaccines don't contribute to autism, you know, covering that up, speaking to Congress and other places. So her job at CDC is to insist that vaccines are safe no matter what. And she was put on this committee. She's a CDC employee, but she was put on this committee, which seemed odd. Amanda Cohn is another CDC employee, and her job too is to demonstrate that vaccines are safe, to insist that vaccines are safe. She had another job added. She was, I guess, their lead on social distancing. So she was going to keep us safe with 6 feet apart this past year. She's also the liaison for the CDC. She's the executive secretary to the CDC's Vaccine Advisory Committee, the ACIP. And so she helps to control what the experts for the CDC hear about vaccines. So that also seemed an odd person to have on the committee, unless you wanted to control what the committee does. Eric Rubin, member, he is the editor-in-chief of the New England Journal.
Completely biased. In fact, it was the New England Journal of Medicine that suggested that people who do not want to be vaccinated should be, in effect, shamed and were a danger to society. We're out of time. Thank you very much for coming on. What you've done what no other newspaper or media in the United States has done. You've shown the truth of what happens to these farcical dancing clown shows from these completely inept, incompetent, and utterly contemptible group at the FDA, and carrying on a long history of sordid policymaking. Same at the CDC. Thank you very much, Meryl Nash.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. We have a whole lot of new stuff, and I'll be writing some new articles for next week. Have a nice day. Stay tuned for, right now, one of the most important voices in all of progressive radio, Utrecht Lead.